Email may not be as popular as it once was, but it's still an important communication tool for many of us. Have you ever thought strategically about your approach to email? How much time you spend on it, the types of questions you ask, the replies you give, or even the subject lines? Byron Patrick has, and he offers some serious advice, as well as his thoughts on the well-placed emoji in this episode of the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Senior Editor Neil Amato, and I talked to Byron, the Director of Pre-Sales and Solutions at BotKeeper, recently about email rules to live by. Here's the conversation. Joined on the podcast by Byron Patrick. Byron, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Look forward to spending some quality time.
We are talking today about email, so we'll start right at the top. Subject lines. Why does a good subject line matter?
There's a few reasons. For one, if you want your email to be read, right? You sent it for a reason. You want it to be opened and read. And when the subject line is "Hi," that doesn't really inspire me to open the email. Not to mention, there's plenty of people who will put the entire message into the subject line, and which actually makes it really difficult to read. So, something quick, concise that's you're marketing to the receiver as to why they should open it. So inspire them to click. And one other tip that I find, people will put something into the subject line and then reference it in the body, assuming that the individual actually read the subject line. So if you say, AICPA in the subject line, and then in the body, will you be at the meeting? Say, will you be at the AICPA meeting? Reference it so I don't have to do the work to paste together the topic.
And then there's another important part about subject lines. In a previous, maybe an email conversation, maybe an article I read, if you don't use a unique subject line, you could starve. Tell me about that.
Yes. So, Microsoft Outlook, Gmail, they all do groupings where it tries to group a conversation together to make it very easy to go through the thread. The problem is it basically just uses the subject line to group. So if you sent me an email a month ago called lunch as the subject, and then you send me an email, and I haven't deleted it, of course, because we just let our inbox turn into a pile. And then you send me another email later, or somebody else sends me an email, and the subject is lunch. They will get grouped together as if it's the same thread. So make sure that you say lunch at Dan's Bakery or Dan's Diner or something so that it's not going to get grouped with maybe another thread where you've already, said, no, I can't make it. And now this is a new request, but you don't realize it because it's been collapsed. So that goes for meetings, client topics. Just make sure you're doing something so you don't potentially get sucked into another generic thread from somebody else.
That's a good point. And we are recording this, man, close to our lunchtime. So Dan's Diner is sounding really good to me. So again, yeah, that lesson, don't use basic subject lines. Should there be rules that team members can all follow to make email communication more efficient? I mean, we all have our individual little things that we like to do, but can those be standardized?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all about conventions within the organization. So if you do like an all caps FYI, which basically means you don't have to take action, you don't have to respond, this is just to keep you informed. Or maybe action required or reply required, something so that I know when it lands in my inbox, I already know what to do with it without having to read through. There's nothing worse than maybe getting an email that's a FYI type email, but you're reading maybe multiple paragraphs wondering, is this urgent? Do I need to take action on it? And then you get to the end and you're like, well, there goes that 5 minutes of my time. So the FYI, maybe I can read a little bit later. So within an organization, it probably doesn't work as well with external users because they might not know the convention, but internally, create some sort of convention, at least to create some efficiency when prioritizing what you're going to read, what you're going to respond to, and you know, what you might just file away for a rainy day.
Have you ever gotten one of those emails where someone in a subject line used an acronym that you didn't understand? I mean, everyone understands FYI, but sometimes there are those that are like, well, you got to set the rules for what those things mean.
Oh, man. I know a few people who they kind of, we live in a world with text messaging and everything where acronyms are, you know, IKR, you know, FWIW for what it's worth. You know, those types of things. And then you have those people who just make up their own acronyms, like based on maybe a phrase they say regularly. I've found myself Googling random acronyms with no clue what it actually is. So yeah, don't use acronyms that people are never going to know or generally understood.
Right. That's a good rule. So speaking of, you mentioned text messaging. Texts can be effective. They can be a quick way to get something from someone that you need or to tell them something. But let's go back. Email. Do you like communicating by email now that we have text and Facebook Messenger and all these other ways, Twitter direct messages? I mean, or is email just something that was cool in the 90s and now it's just passé?
Do I like email? Email is a necessary evil, but effective when used properly. I look at direct messages, text messages, those types of things. Those are quick, simple. Like, I don't send me something that I'm going to have to recall or try to find in a few weeks. If you're sharing facts or maybe something that I'm going to want to refer to, please don't send me a text. Like, there's nothing worse than scrolling through months of text messages trying to find that information. But email, it's great for capturing facts, confirming points, potentially having a dialogue. And I think, you know, we may even discuss, like, effective ways for handling a discussion thread within an email. It is overused. I think there's sometimes when it's not necessarily effective, but I guess I like it. I never thought about it that way.
Plenty of people still use it, so I guess somebody likes it.
Well, there's people who use fax machines too. I don't know if anybody likes those.
That's for sure. Do you ever count the number of emails you reply to in a day and think about, you know, or the number you receive, and maybe think about how much time you spent just in your email inbox?
I would say there was a time when I actually paid attention to that, because for some reason it was almost my best measurement of my productivity during the day, if you will. Number of emails received, number of emails sent, now I find myself more counting how many emails are left at the end of the day. I try very diligently to stay on top of my inbox and move things out that I no longer need to see, that I don't have to take action on. So at the end of the day, it's always kind of a gauge, like, what's left in the inbox? 5, 6, if it's 10 or 15, my day may not be over. So I count more what's left now than definitely the volume that goes through, because it's, I don't want to know that number at this point.
So you're closer to a zero inbox guy than I don't care if the number on my phone shows 4 digits.
I used to be that guy with 7,432 unread messages, and I thought I was really effective working that way. And I never knew how to dig out of it. It was like, you know, some people would say you just have to delete them all at this point and move on, because you will never get down. And then I changed jobs, and it was an opportunity to start fresh. And that was that advice to actually just wipe out the inbox and start over was right on point, because you're never going to dig out of that. So start fresh. And I do, like, if it does not require action from me, it's out of my inbox. If there's still some sort of action required on my behalf, then it stays in my inbox. And I think it works pretty effectively.
How do you separate the emails that are important that come to you for work versus the ones that might be, I don't know, maybe an email newsletter that you subscribe to that you intend to get to? You know, do you set them off by folders? Do you have them kind of funneled in a certain way?
Yeah, I do. So at my previous role, we used Microsoft. So I actually had created a quick action that when I received newsletters or emails that, I just look at later that weren't critical, I had a button that would automatically move it to my holding tank for those emails. Now with BotKeeper, we use G Suite from Google. And it does a really good job of sorting those types of emails. So it's not part of my primary tab of important information, but it's easily available so I can recall it when I want to.
And if something accidentally, if you see that it's important, but it's going to the other tab and you notice it, you can kind of make a setting change?
Yep, absolutely. You can pull it across into the primary, and then it'll actually ask you, do you always want emails from Neil to go into your important inbox? Of course I do.
Of course you want my emails to go there, right?
Absolutely.
Are there ways that just in the way we communicate by email that you can cut down on the number of replies and back and forth that you're doing? Or does it depend on the topic and the person that you're talking to?
I think there's absolutely things you can do. One of them is answer all of the questions the first time. I think people have a habit of receiving an email, they read the first question in the email, and they get locked and loaded on that first question. So they fire off a reply answering the first question, but completely ignoring the next three that were in the email. And, that means I'm going to receive another reply that says, hey, but how about these other things? It goes back and forth. If you read the full email, pay attention to all of the questions and respond appropriately, it will absolutely cut down on the back and forth. The second strategy there, though, from a sender's perspective, is don't put all the questions in paragraph form. It's really easy for the questions to get lost in a paragraph. So if you bullet out the questions, it's easier for my eyes to sort those questions and then respond to all of the questions in a single reply and cut down on the back and forth. And obviously it's more timely at that point.
We've talked about text messaging earlier, and we've talked about acronyms. Acronyms are probably something that came from the text message and have now kind of bled into email use. Another thing from the text world that's come into email use is the use of emojis. And there are some people who say this about email emoji use: don't use them. What do you say?
Yeah, I disagree entirely. I'm a fan of the emoji. And email is bland and boring, unemotional, and emotion, they allow you to give your email a little personality. And I know people say, hey, don't ever email somebody you don't know. Like, it's okay if I'm emailing Neil, because we're on that level. But I personally disagree. I've never offended anybody using a smiley face. Now, I will tell you, there are people who over emoji, and they 47 smiley faces, a few little flowers, and an eggplant is just too much. That's when I communicate, you know, with my kids and everything else, the you know, over emoji. You know, throw in a smiley face or a little winky or something just to give that sentence some personality. So it's more than just black and white text.
That's a good point. I mean, email doesn't have to be boring. It can be very straightforward, very transactional. But if you have a little bit of a rapport with someone, it helps build that rapport even more.
Oh, I absolutely. I mean, even if it's, you know, thanks for your help, smiley face. Hey, you know, the smiley face kind of adds a nice touch, I think.
It's true. It's not just a bland word and then comma, you know, regards, comma, Byron.
Regards, right.
I actually read something that, and I know a couple people who use it as their set email salutation, that just the word regards in, I believe it's the UK, that, you know, it just comes off as cold to some people. I'm not trying to single out the UK, right, but just some words mean different things to different people. Some people think sincerely is not very sincere. You know, so right, it depends. So maybe smiley face Byron is the best way to please everyone.
It won't offend anybody. Regards, that might come off as a little dry to some folks.
We're going to move on to a different topic related to email. Out of office messages. What's the big deal about how they're phrased? Does it even matter?
I believe it does. When I send somebody an email and the response is, I'm out of office, and that's it. I have no idea when they're returning. I have no idea if I need to escalate my request to somebody else. It really doesn't help me other than to know my email is not going to get read. Or maybe it will, but I have no idea. So I recommend a little something worthwhile so the sender who receives my out of office knows what to do from there. If this is urgent, send it to so-and-so. I'll be returning on this day and I'll respond as soon as I can. So I, you know, make it valuable and useful. Don't just leave it as a blah, I'm not here.
What do you think about traveling to a conference but not setting an out of office email if you're going to be out of the office for 3 days?
That's an interesting question, and I it's one I've struggled with in the past. I can tell you when I first started my company, I wanted to kind of create the assumption that I'm always available to my customers and so on. So if I was going to a conference, I'd be checking email. So I figured I'm not out of the office. I've flipped the script on that a little bit because I would rather be overly cautious and set expectations. I'm out of the office, but I'll be checking email as frequently as I can. That way, at least you know that it might take, I'm not going to promise you 24-hour response time, but it may take me a little while to get back to you because I am preoccupied with something. So I'm at this stage in my career, I'm a little more overly cautious about setting it, you know, even maybe at times when it's not necessary.
I think that's a good point. And you mentioned when I started my company. Now, that's a few iterations ago.
That is.
Just so I'm clear on timing.
Right, 2008, so 11 years ago. And that, you know, that was also pre, you know, Slack and all of these forms of many, many forms of communication. So really at that time, I mean, email absolutely was a primary avenue. Now it's nauseating how many forms we have to track.
On the topic of out-of-office messages, I once read someone's recommendations, quote, be sure to check for any red lines. What are red lines as it relates to an out-of-office message?
Well, it's funny. So with Microsoft Office, or Outlook in particular, when you go to set your out-of-office responder, it doesn't do the standard red line squiggly for misspelled words. So you find a lot of typos. And I'm by no means a grammar Nazi, you know, I do like to at least spell my words properly, and I depend on spell check. So I will often write my out of office in Microsoft Word so that I can see if there's anything spelled wrong, copy and paste it into the setting. That way I have that assurance that things are spelled appropriately.
That's a good point. I mean, that could be a good point for really any important email.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean,
is it just an out of office that the spell check doesn't happen, or is it in a regular message?
So in a regular message, there is a setting that can be toggled sometimes to turn that off. I always make sure it does spell check automatically before sending, which can get annoying if you have things that, aren't in the dictionary. But So you're good within the body of the email, and you'll still get the squigglies. But with the out-of-office setting, yeah, for whatever reason, Outlook has not configured that to do that automatic spell check.
So, yeah, if your out-of-office message has, I'm out of the office and no other info, but they also misspelled office, then that makes it even worse.
Hopefully there's at least an emoji.
That's right. That's the one way to salvage an email with Byron. The first time you ever saw the acronym OOO, did you have any idea what it meant?
I had no idea what it meant. That was definitely one of them that I was Googling. And frankly, I'm still not comfortable with it. I don't know why.
I mean, it just looks like ooh to me.
That's right. I just think of cows because I just want to put an M on it. And it's kind of a weird acronym to use, in my opinion.
A little bit off the topic of email, but kind of, and maybe it's a question for another day. We'll actually decide on the fly. Why do you subscribe to this rule? You suggest a meeting, you create it, and then how do you follow through on that?
Right. So if I request a meeting with you, I feel that it's my obligation to send you the meeting invite. And I think there's a lot of people out there who assume everybody's just going to manage their calendar appropriately and put the appointment on their own calendar because we're all adults and we should be able to do that. Well, we're all busy adults. And I believe whoever initiated the request for a meeting, appointment, phone call, whatever it is, should follow up with actually scheduling and sending that invite to the receiver. That way, worst case scenario, you put it on there and now you got an invite from me. So now it's twice sure you're going to show up. So I really believe that it's somebody's responsibility. So if it's an important meeting to you, take the initiative to put it on my calendar.
What would you like to add or reemphasize in closing?
Pay attention to this stuff. I've shared this type of feedback with people, and they go, oh, I do that all the time. And I go, yeah, you don't send an appointment all the time. You're exactly right. And take a little bit of time to reflect on it, because if you can be more effective in your email communication, it helps out everybody. It helps out your team. It helps out your customers. Probably avoids a lot of miscommunication as well. So don't puff your chest and assume that you do all of these things. This has been a progression of learning and trying new things and paying attention to it. And I think a lot of people just don't really pay too much attention. They just, it's a necessary evil. But I believe it's one that you can do a better job with.
Byron, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.